Houston indeed has undergone some major changes. The last time I was in Houston about 14 years ago, there were cow pastures out here and oil derricks, oil rigs. And today what you have are tall buildings that are sprouting up all over the place.
Because also, of those oil derricks.
Because of those oil derricks. I believe that Houston is now called the oil city if the United States. And home on the range has been replaced with home or out of home at Enron Field. And by the way, I think Enron Field has undergone a change in name. When I was here last in Houston, I
Minifield
came at to that's what it is today.
Yeah.
But I thought that was
Orange
Florida.
Juice Field.
I guess they have sunshine in common here in Houston. And today we will get a chance to go around Houston to see indeed if the sun still shines in the Fort and Third Ward. I said I came out here to Houston some 14 years ago, and I met Michael Leland at the funeral of an old-time Houstonian, Blanche Orla Hardy, whose family came to Texas after emancipation, set up some of the first black businesses in Houston. They owned a gas station, and they were a prominent family and respected family in the community. But it seems that what I'm hearing today, that Mickey Leland's whole district is still beset by poverty, crime, and unemployment. And Texas is not just the death penalty capital of the world. It seems that Houston is, in addition to pumping oil these days, it is also pumping out a lot of black men who are now in the penitentiaries and on death row in Texas. The African-American population in Houston has decreased to some 20%. According to the census, the Hispanic population is at about 25% or so. And the demographic said that the original inhabitants of this land, the Native American, comprises a little more than one half of 1%
Errol,
of the population of Houston.
You know, it's interesting. When I was going to Bush Intercontinental Airport yesterday, right, when you fly from Houston to Washington, you go from Bush to Reagan, but they've named the Intercontinental Airport Bush Airport. They were originally going to name it Mickey Leland Airport, No, in the end, they didn't do that. And you remember the racist comment of a council member saying, what are we going to call this? And they said, you said the N-word, international. In the end, they only named the international terminal after Mickey Leland. I don't know how often you talk about the terminal that you're going to, but Bush trumped Leland, and it became Bush International Airport. So when you come into Bush Airport, you see all the pictures of the Bush family, including Bush signing NAFTA October 7th, 1992, with Carlos Salinas, who's now, I guess, in exile in Ireland, his brother in jail, former president of Mexico, and the Prime Minister Mulroney of Canada. They've got all the family pictures of the Bush family and historic moments.
Well, Amy, I was intrigued to do a program this morning on the crisis in Pacifica and the changes in Houston from a place where Michael Leland would be known and revered throughout the world as a activist person, a person who was concerned with the question and the issue of hunger and poverty worldwide. And indeed, he died in a plane crash in Africa dealing with the famine situation there some years ago. A story was related to me that the Pacifica Board voted in January to make changes in the way programming was done in the stations to return the banned and the fired and to basically emancipate the stations. The folks in Texas, the black community in Texas did not know that that had taken place until March or thereabouts. And it's the remembrance of Juneteenth. So today we are here in studio with Deb Shafter. Did I get that right? Deb Shafter. And Diallo Kantambo, who are both, one of them is a former programmer and I think is currently back on the air at KPFT, and Deb, who is the chair of the local board. And trying to put this in context, and as Sharan has done before, is to give you a summary of what took place at the local board. I think the major decision that was made at the local board this weekend was to once and for all settle the question of the headquarters of Pacifica moving back to Berkeley, California, where it has been for many years now, Berkeley being the birthplace of the Pacifica Radio Network. They've also been making some headways on the bylaws, the revision of the bylaws of Pacifica, has decided to reconvene the board meeting in 3 weeks to continue to work on the bylaw. And also yesterday, one of the last decisions that the board took was to vote to set up and to fund. The board did not vote to fund, but KPFA offered funding for a diversity group. When it came down to dealing with the issue of diversity, the Pacifica budget did not contain enough money because the budget is out of balance. There's a deficit budget which was approved to vote in monies to fund a part-time coordinator for the diversity office. But KPFA decided that they would fund that office. I hope our local station in New York would also join in to kick in some funds to see to it that diversity and pluralism actually comes to Pacifica. But joining me in studio to discuss the state of affairs at the Pacifica station in Houston and also why it is so significant that the voices of and the sound of Texas includes the diverse voice, which has for so long comprised this community. And I want to welcome you, Deb, to WBAI New York. You got to pull the microphone down to you and speak directly.
Good morning. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Okay. How long have you been associated with Pacifica, and how does your work as a peace activist and a children's advocate meshes with the work of Pacifica?
Well, of course, without saying the mission of Pacifica, the outlet of Pacifica is our only hope for building a world that works. People don't have the right information on which to make their decisions, and they've been making some really very bad decisions. If we don't have Pacifica, the struggle is almost impossible. So it became really obvious that to me, for many years, I just thought there was bad programming at KPFT, and I sort of just stopped listening. But when I understood that it was really about a struggle for control of the media, I got involved, and I don't think there's anything more important going on in my life right now.
Diallo Kantambo, you are a business person in Houston. What is your community background and your business background that draws you to Pacifica?
Well, I put in a lot of time with children in Houston and mentoring programs and that sort of thing. And in business, I've been involved with technical things, computer software and computers for quite a long time, maybe 15, 18 years. Yeah. And around Pacifica here, I had a talk show for 4 years and dealt with political issues and environmental issues, that kind of thing.
What is the state of the black community in Houston, and how much of that filters through in the local media?
Well, it's a pretty broad and diverse community, but we don't get a lot of it in the media. Especially here in Houston, because most of the media here in Houston is conservative. And the issues they're concerned about are not issues that affect the African-American community as much as they do some other communities. Even issues that are clearly a problem for not only the African-American community, but everyone in this town, they tend not to talk about. As an example, transportation in this town. Transportation is just terrible. Here we are right now at this late date, just now laying the tracks for the first train that this city has had. And all because a politician and some people in the suburbs want to block the poor community from having housing out in the outlying communities. It's just a shame that we're doing that, and no other part of the media talks about it in this town.
And when you say no other part of the media talks about it, does that mean that Pacifica over the years have been covering this issue?
They haven't covered it near as much as I thought they should. Because I think people's view of the issue, using this one as an example, hasn't been correct and has been honest in some cases. As an example, the argument will be, well, we don't have the right rail plan, as an example. The rail plan is not the problem. You know, the problem is that if they put in rail that allows poor people to go out to outlying communities, what happens then is that these real estate developers will build apartments for these people to live out there. And these people in these outlying areas don't want these people in their communities.
But conversely, the last time I went down, you know, drove around just for a few minutes, underneath the tall buildings around Enron Field, which is smack dab in the downtown of Houston, I saw buildings there that looked like they were sharecroppers' residents, and encroaching on those homes were fancy townhouses. The new gentrifiers are coming in. So what then has become of the black population in Houston? Houston being a southern state and a right-to-work state, are we finding that what has happened to the black population?
Well, housing has become a problem. People have been pushed into communities where they're crowded. The housing is not that great.
Integration, has it happened in Houston? In these new subdivisions that are here, I see houses that seems to sit on vast acreage of lands, you know, townhouses with great backyards looking out in the bayou. Do we have people, African American working class people living in these houses?
Yeah, a number of the certain neighborhoods are clearly integrated. But there are lots of other neighborhoods people just can't afford to live in around Houston, and those are the neighborhoods that are very difficult to afford to get into.
You work, and I'm going to bring Deb into this. What is the state of education in Houston today? In New York, our governor said that an eighth-grade education is sufficient. We know that in New York City, seven neighborhoods where the schools are failing send most of the people to prison in the state of New York. What is the state of education in Houston? How are people making out? How are funding for education? And Deb, you're going to take
that. Yeah, I do want to talk about this. It's something that's been of great concern for me for many years. When Bush was here, he sort of left his stamp on this educational process. And instead of doing true education, instead of educating the individual so that the individual can live his life to the fullest, they are trying to make factory fodder for factories that don't even exist. The training in school is to train to walk in lines. I'm not talking about every single school or every single principal, but I'm talking as an overall thing. They are trying to eliminate any kind of originality in the classroom by demanding programs that are scripted. They are trying to reduce to a certain common denominator by testing, by standardized testing. And there are so many tests that we give our children we lose so much instructional time. And whether you like it or not, when there is a standardized test, that is what the teacher teaches to. In other words, if you have to reach a certain limit, a level of accomplishment to for your children to be deemed an acceptable teacher, you don't take any children past that. You spend your time trying to get those who fall below that level up to that level so that you remain at a certain minimal level. Children do not excel any longer. And even though they deny that's the case, it's not accidental. This is a very militaristic factory kind of education we're giving our young people, and it just grieves me.
Errol?
On September 11th, I was crying almost all day because of that.
Robert?
Errol, just a reminder.
Robert?
Akua Holt is on the line here by telephone coming through New York as well.
Okay, Robert, and we will go to Akua in a moment. But let me just once again reintroduce our guest here, coming to you live and direct from Houston, Texas, where I guess the sound of Texas is still raining in the background next door. We're talking with Diala Kantambo, who is a programmer and a member of the local board to KPFT, and Deb Shafter, who is the chair of that local board. And you fine individuals have been in position just over the last, few months. Okay. And, Akua Holt, I related before a story that you mentioned to me in passing that the African-American community in Texas did not hear about the coming of the changes in Pacifica until several months after that took place. Could you tell me what happened to you when you tried to inform the community of the changes that were impending in Pacifica, and just exactly when you did in fact hear about that those changes had successfully taken place, the emancipation so-called of KPFT?
Well, good morning, Errol, and thanks again for having me on, and a shout-out to all the listeners in New York. Yes, I have been in touch with people, other Pacifica members and programmers from around the country, and fortunately I was able to keep abreast of the changes that were being made. However, when I heard about the loss of settlement, I waited and waited for local information and called around, and you know, people kept saying, well, yeah, there were changes, and we're meeting here, we're meeting at this place, this time. But what I noticed is there was no particular effort to alert communities of color. So I thought, okay, I have better get involved right now so I can make sure that our community was aware, number one, that there was a lawsuit, number two, that there was a settlement agreement, and three, that agreement included our community being a part of the process. Because in recent years, since 1996, the black community here in Houston, we have been completely isolated from Pacifica, not only in programming, but also with regards to the board. We had no representation on the board, as well as on the staff. So we felt that this was a great opportunity to re-energize the community, be involved with Pacifica from top down, and to have parity within the institution. As far as I can remember, and I've been a part of Pacifica maybe since 1987, I don't ever remember seeing a good presence of African-American people on the board or on the staff of Pacifica. And during those times, we had issues that were, there were serious issues that we needed to have someone to bring those issues to the table as far as board representation, but unfortunately, that was a very difficult time prior to 1986, and we didn't have a voice on the board. So now here we are in 2002 trying to figure out, okay, you know, the changes have happened, how are we going to re-energize the community? And we felt the best way to do that was to alert the community about the settlement. And we did that, I think, in April. And we invited Deb Shafto, our local board chair, and Dwayne Bradley, the current station manager, to be a part of that process. And we had over 70 people to show up to that meeting, and they represented various community organizations. That meeting was held on the campus of Texas Southern University, which is one of the largest and oldest black universities here in Texas. And it was a very successful meeting. Out of that meeting, we took a survey so people can at least voice their opinion as to what type of programming they would like to hear in Pacifica. And again, I'd like to stress, since 1996, we've had no progressive public affairs programming. So many people felt that this would be the first priority to include African-American public affairs programming locally so that we can get people involved with Pacifica again. However, currently today, this is now September going into October, I think we have a total of 3, if not 4, hours of African-American programming. And we're very frustrated by this process. We know that change takes time. However, we're a little disappointed that since the changes, we've only gained about 4 hours approximately of public affairs programming. And recently, 2 of those 4 hours, I think, was just added to the roster maybe 2 weeks ago.
Yes, I wanted to chip in here. Areas in the black community in Houston that are absolutely critical. The treatment of African Americans in the court system, the treatment of African Americans in the child protective service area, in many, many areas absolutely must be publicized, and we need to get these stories out. I think, like many stories, once you dig them out from under the rocks where they've been lying for a long time, the light of the sun will make just the light of the sun, the light of people knowing of what's going on, will make changes. One of the programs at SHAPE follows young people through their court process and promises the court-appointed lawyers that they will be, their work or lack of it in behalf of black defendants will be publicized. And should they decide not to bother to visit their clients ahead of time, as often happens, and should they offer weak or unenergetic defense of their clients, that it will be publicized. And these are kinds of stories that we absolutely must get on the air. This is injustice at the very basic level, and it's why our jails are primarily inhabited by African American descendants.
Errol, for you and your guests, I think as we prepare to move on, I'd like to ask a question. You know, Stevie Wonder once sang, "It's taken us so long because we've had so far to come." How can people of Pacifica in the New York audience help advance the importance, participation, and evolution of our sibling in Houston?
Well, I can tell you one difference that is made by myself and Reem being here in Houston. And by the way, we were invited to Houston back in 1999 while we were in Minnesota to come here and make one of our passes while we were visiting around the country to organize. Well, it made a difference by somebody of color standing up in a meeting and inviting a member of the African American community who wandered into the room not quite knowing what to expect and making them feel welcome and telling them that yes, you can participate and informing the board members that in fact these people's voices need to be heard. When the official Houston report was given and they asked the people in the room to stand up from Houston, they were, to my eyes, all white. But later on, after alerting the delegations that this meeting, in fact, was taking place and that they were welcome and that there was a place on the agenda, because the meeting in Houston was not publicized because they didn't want to upset the people who were listening to blues, because they're going to the fundraiser and they wanted to get those people's money. So none of the meeting was publicized. None of the programming was changed. And so people in the African-American community didn't know that their concerns would be addressed, but by our inviting them in, they came in and they had an opportunity to talk.
Yeah, and one of the things Pacifica has to do, I mean, they have to make people more comfortable when they come around. The culture around Pacifica feels, I believe, a little alien to African Americans when they come around sometimes. As an example, when we have entertainment after events, the entertainment doesn't even reflect the African American community. So they don't feel comfortable in it. But I have another concern myself, and that is that I wish the African American community would push harder to be involved, because it wouldn't take that much for them to be influential. I attend meetings here often where there are 15 and 20 people in those committee meetings, and there will be one or two African Americans in those meetings. And if there had been four or five African Americans in that meeting, the vote would have gone differently. So it has to be a combination of Pacifica doing outreach to help bring people in, but the African American community has got to make that decision that they want to actively push to be more involved in the Pacifica community.
Well, I think we've made...
And I think the question also goes to Akua.
Yes. Well, I think the African American community, we've made a very committed effort to be a part of Pacifica. We have been meeting with the local board chair as well as the station manager and the program director. We've had these meetings literally every 2 weeks since April, right, Deb? I think since April. What I found is that while we have voiced our opinion, we've expressed why and how we can be involved, we've met nothing but resistance. I think we need to address the question of really inclusion and how do you reach out to a community and not alienate that community once they become involved in the process. We were successful in having...
One of the things that's important about this, that other stations can do to support us and that Pacifica needs to do already is underway, and that is because racism is invisible to those who are perpetrating it because they don't realize what they're doing, and because it's such a personal attack. Everybody knows you're not supposed to be racist, and it's very hard for them to see. We need somebody from the outside to come in and take a look. If you walk into a room here and it's all white, you should know right away there's something going on that's not right.
Well, we'll do our best to help with that situation, and I'd like to thank you all for joining us this morning on the air of WBAI in New York in an effort to increase
Robert.
The cultural pluralism and to strengthen the Pacifica Radio Network by that inclusion.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Errol.
Thank you, Robert. And we will be back in touch. And I guess we can now add to our calendar a new date that Pacifica Emancipation came to Texas in May, and maybe we can celebrate that day.
17th, 2000. Okay, Errol Maitland, we look forward to seeing you back here in New York, and thank you to our...